Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And we are here, short one man, still ready to do a good show for you. Starting things off with us tonight, we got our man, wide receiver one, Miles Gorham. What's going on, Doug?
You know, always tough coming back from those losses. Watching the team lose like that wasn't fun at all.
Saxy Prince. How about you, man? How you dealing with today? You know, last week we were going 19-0. How you feeling this week when we apparently are going to be picking first in the draft?
Well, see, for me, before the season, I had already chalked up the Pittsburgh game as a loss, regardless of whether we had Sam Bradford or not. So, I mean, for me, that kind of cushioned it kind of cushioned the blow as far as my expectations for the game. If we won, it was great. But if we lost, you know, I was already on to Tampa Bay before the game even started. So not to say that I'm not upset because I, you know, I hate seeing my team lose, but you know, like I said, on to Tampa Bay.
Well, it seems like the team might've been on to Tampa Bay right there with you, but you mentioned the man, Sam Bradford. And so I think that's the topic I wanted to kick things off with for us tonight is that, I guess the way the team handled the whole Sam situation with the knee and he's going to play, he's not going to play. And then him testing it out and obviously not being able to go. The clips of him limping around on the field. The one that really stuck with me was, I think it was Ross Tucker, where the quote was, the scar tissue was so bad, they really were having a tough time reading what was going on in there from an MRI perspective. Like, what are your thoughts on just the whole week, how this, how the team handled this and, you know, the way that they've handled injuries in general. And then, how this kind of weighs on what the team does for the rest of the season and potentially even further ahead than that with Sam Bradford now that, you know, these chronic issues are popping up. So, Miles, I'll kick it to you first. I guess what were your thoughts on how the whole thing went this week with the Sam Bradford knee situation?
Well, I honestly just don't think they knew. Basically, based off the MRI coming back negative, and if, you know, those what Ross Tucker was saying is true of they had a hard time reading the MRI based on the scar tissue. I mean, really it's all about if they're seeing that the there's no ligament damage, that it's basically just a swelling and a pain tolerance thing at this point. So they needed to see. So the team itself wasn't sure how he would feel come Sunday this morning. So today, if, you know, if for some reason the swelling goes away and he starts feeling a lot better and he has a little bit more mobility in his knee today, you know, it's a little bit more of an opportunity to take that chance than it would be, you know, as, you know, the results we saw today where he's limping around, couldn't barely move, you know, couldn't step into throws or anything like that. That was the biggest key is where his knee swelling, where the swelling and the pain tolerance is at. And where you could see it was, even off of the limited videos we saw, wasn't good. So I'm all for them, you know, making sure that they did the right thing by sitting him and not forcing him to play and making sure, because again, it's a long season. It's only week two. If this was, you know, maybe week 14 or 15, you know, vying for that playoff spot, it might have been a different scenario. Honestly, I don't know. I don't want to speculate on that, but I just think it's one of those things that we don't know, and I don't want to challenge what the team did because I think they tried to do their best to get him to play. Did everything they could to get the swelling to go down. But at the end of the day, you know, you have a guy like Case Keenum who, you know, you trust enough to step in there and start if you need him. And I don't know. I don't think there's really much else they could have really done at this case just because of the way it unexpectedly happened.
So there's a couple of things that you said there that I wanted to touch on because you had a tweet earlier today kind of calling fans out for calling NFL players soft. And I think there's something in the way we kind of use the term like pain tolerance, and you just used it there. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to clarify because oftentimes I think when fans hear, you know, pain tolerance or something like that basically means, oh, we'll just, you know, suck it up, ice up, you know, pop something, shoot something and get out there and play. I guess I know that's not what you meant. I guess what are you really referring to when you're saying, you know, like it's a pain tolerance issue for him to get out there and play?
Like, is it to the point where he can withstand what's going on? And it, you know, because basically what it was, you know, after the game Monday, it sounds like the knee swelled up to the point where, you know, it started to hurt. And it's like, I guess pain tolerance is like one of those in this situation. I can't speak for Sam Bradford and, you know, the way that knee feels, because I've never hurt my knee in that sense, so I can't talk too much about it. Actually, Jason, you might be a perfect person to, you know, talk more about, you know, pain tolerance in a knee. But, you know, when you hurt your knee, it's a big difference between, like, I'd even consider like an ankle or, you know, any other ligament, basically, especially in, you know, sport where you, like for a guy like Sam Bradford, where he has to use, you know, step into throws with that left knee and a lot of, you know, flexibility in your knee to, you know, to bend and everything like that. So, in terms of pain tolerance, I think it's just more of like, is the swelling down enough where it can't continue to hurt itself, or if, where, you know, where you can't do any more further damage than what's already there. And if that's the case, then maybe, you know, maybe he could have played. But if that's not the case, and what's it sounding like is that wasn't the case, of where it wasn't just a pain tolerance thing. It was like a, you know, he might have been able to like toughen it out in a sense, but there could have been more damage that could have happened, which is something you don't want to risk. So there, it goes hand in hand. So it's not just a pain tolerance. It's a, you know, how is his knee going to hold up? Can it hold up past the pain tolerance aspect of it? So I think, you know, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to clarify that.
Yeah, but I think that you really touched on it there, where it's not just about, you know, can he deal with the pain? Because obviously, you know, they can give you stuff to deal with the pain, but you really touched on it there. And I think Dr. David Chow, who's on Twitter, I think is a, you know, pro football doc or something like that. He wrote a little blurb where it was basically, it's not just about the pain, but about the fact that it would compromise Sam's ability to do the things that we really need him to do. So Sam makes his money on being a very accurate passer. And one of the knocks on Sam as things are right now is that Sam doesn't really navigate in the pocket all that well all the time. And so what he was saying is that one of the big things you need to worry about with the issue, with the injury or the issue that we were dealing with Sam, is that it would compromise his accuracy. So Sam wouldn't be able to throw the ball as accurately. He wouldn't be able to throw the ball downfield as often because of the torque required to do it. And it would make him even less able to move around in the pocket and protect himself. And when you really read it like that, I mean, yeah, it felt like a no-brainer to not play him. And so I was, yeah, you're disappointed as a fan that we are, you know, we're not likely. We're probably going to lose the game anyway. I think that's how many of us were feeling going in. But we're definitely not winning with, you know, Case Keenum leading the offense. So you're disappointed as a fan, but, you know, playing the long game here, you know, an inaccurate Sam unable to protect himself in the pocket is not what anyone really needs, I don't think. So, now, anyway, that's all I really wanted to say on that. Prince, I want to go to you on one thing, because I know that something we've talked about a lot is, you know, the Vikings under Zimmer, they really treat injuries like, you know, they're state secrets or something with the CIA, with the way that, you know, before the game and even after the game, Zimmer decided he was going to address the situation with Sam and the knee and how we were going to do with all that. And then, you know, post-game when folks were asking about it, I mean, obviously Zimmer's angry. We lost the game. We played really sloppy. His defense got lit up. So we get it. He's an emotional dude. But even he seemed upset that people were asking him questions about his quarterback being injured, when obviously, I mean, it's the quarterback. People are going to ask you questions about it. So I guess what are your thoughts on all that in terms of how the team handled the injury situation before today, and then kind of, you know, after the game when people were asking about it, how Zimmer – handled it after the fact?
I think it's very clear that the Vikings can only handle one quarterback knee situation at a time, given that I kind of want to say they handle it in the right way, but at the same time, I think there's aspects of it that they don't always handle the greatest. I think when the issue kind of came up on Friday, long-term speaking, I think I would have been more okay going into the game just sitting Sam Bradford, just because how important he is to, you know, whether it be immediate or long-term success for the Vikings. Like, it's very important that he's able to be under center. I would have just been okay, like, hey, you know, just sit him down, let the guys know that Case Keenum's your guy going forward. You know, whatever, you know, chemistry we saw that was already starting to get built with between Keenum and Adam Thielen on Friday, you know, that's good. Me, I'm not a huge fan of game time decisions when it comes to quarterbacks, just because, again, you know, one thing, he gets hit one way or maybe he tries to slide and he further injures himself. You know, it's just it doesn't bode well for your, again, whether it be immediate or long term future. As far as post game, you know, I know that Zimmer doesn't, he's very clear he doesn't like answering injury related questions. You know, obviously being he just lost the game, he's in his feelings, he's kind of emotional, all of this stuff. But at the same time, like, I think Zimmer, not that he doesn't understand it, but maybe he just needs to adjust better to it. Like reporters have a job, you know, and they're taught, if you don't get the answer, if you don't feel satisfied with the answer that you were given, you have to ask the question again. And like, it's their job as well too. And as a head coach, you kind of sign up for this, you know, you sign up for the role to be able to answer questions, mitigate any, you know, tension or misunderstandings that might have happened, or even just communicate better to not just the reporters, but also to the fans as well. Hey, what's going on? Just like, keep us in the loop and stuff. Because again, as fans, as investors, we want to know that our investment is, you know, everything's going okay with it. And after this being Zimmer's fourth year, I kind of still see him not doing the greatest here, and when I would have liked for him to improve a little bit more. Again, granted, I know he's never really been an injury head coach to like to answer that those questions and stuff. So post game, even more so, I would say that, you know, he didn't handle it the greatest. I think they handled it good, just, you know, making the decision to sit Sam Bradford. Honestly, in my opinion, I think it probably would be better if they sat Sam Bradford for another week just to make sure he's more than 100% ready to go come week 4, 5, 6, and 7, you know, because like, Sam Bradford goes down, you know, we only banked on having Keenum for maybe 2 or 3 games this season. If he has to start, we just start dipping in, and he's playing, you know, 6, 7, you know, then the Vikings season doesn't look nearly as optimistic as it did beforehand. So aspects of it that I applaud them, and then aspects of it I think they need to improve.
All right. So before we jump into the game, because obviously we're going to need to talk about the game on this podcast episode, this does bring up, you know, a subject that I know that all of us have kind of been doing our best to really avoid, and letting other people fight those battles, you know, on Twitter.com and other places. But coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, as it was being announced that Sam Bradford was not going to be playing this game, Ian Rappaport was on the NFL Network this morning saying that Teddy Bridgewater will be back and looks like he'll be, you know, resuming practice activities and getting ready to play come midseason. So I guess from your perspective, and I know that, you know, that added fuel to the fire this morning where people were already sensitive about everything, you know, Sam versus Teddy and all those other things. I guess, how does this change things in your view with, we all knew Sam had issues with his knees, but the fact that, you know, just kind of, you know, old man knees or whatever we're going to call them could swell up and cause so many issues that he just can't play, even though there wasn't, you know, an active trauma that happened to the knee. His knee just hurt so badly and was so swollen up because of all the scar tissue that's going on in there. He just couldn't play in a game. I guess, how do you think that affects the team's thought process when it comes to what kind of contract they want to give Sam Bradford, or how they structure that kind of contract? And what do you think that means for the team now in terms of their plans for how they deal with Teddy Bridgewater when he does come off PUP? And do they start to try to bring him in and work him up to be that number two quarterback so they can maybe start to have an open competition or see who's going to be more healthy or more ready come end of the season? Like, I guess, Yinka, we'll start with you, and then we'll bring it back over to Miles to wrap us up on the subject. I guess, what are your thoughts on kind of this new element that's been added into the, you know, Sam and Teddy ongoing saga that's been gripping the world of Vikings fans?
I think we all, like you had said in the beginning, we've all really tried our hardest to stay away from this, even though folks want to get us wrapped back into it. If only for the purpose that you're answering this question or asking this question, I'll answer it. when you look at contract negotiations, when you look at a guy who's in his fourth year versus a guy in the seventh year, guy in the seventh year who's looking for to really get paid as a starter, a guy in his, you know, coming off his rookie deal who, you know, knows that he doesn't have as much leverage to really push a high contract from a quarterback standpoint. You know, the Vikings have to look at this, you know, more obviously from dollar standpoint. You know, what you have in Sam Bradford is you kind of know where he's at. You know where he's going to continue to be the guy he's probably has been his most of his career. I mean, I think we've seen that. Whereas Teddy Bridgewater, you've seen a little bit. He's younger. He still might have some a higher ceiling, a bigger potential, all that stuff. You know, but you still have to see it. Now, I've definitely been an advocate of drafting a quarterback, and you know, whoever between Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater shows you who's has the upside, let them battle. But I do think that this changes things a little bit, because at the end of the day, Teddy in and of itself is always going to become cheaper, come cheaper than Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford, the only way that he can truly, not to say that it changed their minds, but get them to believe like, hey, this is our guy going forward, is he needs to come back from injury. He needs to show that this injury isn't really, you know, maybe it's just, you know, every so often there might be some swelling or whatever the case is, but he can still play for, you know, 15, 16 games. But in terms of that, it, from an organizational standpoint, if you have to worry about a guy who's constantly going to have this issue, and I mean, not just Sam, but also for Teddy, you know, you might have to start looking at, okay, if none of these guys are our future, then let me go with the person who's going to be cheaper to bring back, and then go get me a guy who can potentially be our future. So I do think it changes things from a standpoint. And I think from Condon and Sam, they're probably going to try to rush Sam to get him back to make sure he, you know, plays that lights out that he did against the Saints. But it's going to be tough, because I feel like he might need a few games rest, and that's probably going to help. That's probably going to hurt him in the long run.
Miles, what about you? What are your thoughts? I know that that obviously you as well, you tend to be the voice of reason when these Sam Teddy things pop up. Yeah, what are your thoughts with all of this, and kind of how, you know, the Sam news came out one minute and the Teddy news came out the next, and you know how these things might affect what the team has planned or how you would handle it if you were in a decision maker in the situation?
I mean, honestly, I don't know how I'd handle this right now. I just think it goes back to by the end of the season, whoever's the healthiest playing better, if Teddy does come back and ends up playing, between the two, who plays better, who does, you know, who shows better long-term success. It's a tough situation right now. With Sam's, this injury just literally just popped up. So it's not one of those that you're anticipating that you can anticipate. You never know if it could happen again. But that's anybody though, really. If anybody's had any kind of surgery, you never know what could flare up and what could pop up, even without, without being hit or anything like that. So it's so weird with that. So I just think it was really hard for the Vikings to really see that and know that. So in terms of contract discussions, the guy like Sam about something like this, I think I'd have a hard time. I mean, no matter what, you know, whoever if they were to sign either one to a potential long-term deal, I don't think it would be the way the Vikings structure their contracts. I think they'd find a way to keep themselves in a manageable situation to where they're not getting, you know, screwed over, you know, come year two or three or four, if something were to happen, you know, whether it's through injury or, you know, otherwise. So that's not something I'm really like too worried about at this point, the contract talks and extensions, because it's way too early. And I know that at least as of right now, the Vikings are just playing the long game where they're not in any rush to do anything or make any rash decisions, because they shouldn't. They have no need to speed any decisions up right now, especially after this kind of Bradford injury. Speaking of Teddy, though, we've heard for the last like month or two that he's looked a lot more ahead of schedule than they might have thought, or at least I know they said the schedule is a little unpredictable, but at least, you know, since the injury happened about just over a year ago, that, you know, people didn't expect it. They expected like a year and a half or so for recovery. So looks like things could be a little ahead of schedule in that sense. And if that's the case, that at least helps you if Sam Bradford's going to continue to have these lingering knee injuries, that if Teddy can get himself back to 100%, you might have that fallback option of him coming back into play. I'm not the biggest advocate for it, just because I'd prefer Teddy to get at least a few weeks of practice and a preseason game before even stepping foot onto a, you know, a live NFL football game. But, you know, I'm not, so I really don't know how they're going to handle that. I think it's really tough to just be like, for fans or anybody or even the organization to kind of sit there and say, oh, well, it's okay. You know, if, you know, Sam's knee's struggling a little bit, we have Sam coming, or excuse me, Teddy coming back in 5 weeks or whatever, 4 weeks or whatever that is now. Cause we really don't know where Teddy would be at mentally in terms of how he'd play in a live game, you know, taking a first hit or anything like that. So it's a really tough situation. I really don't know how they're going to handle it. I just think right now, personally, if Sam's healthy, you know, at all, at any point, you know, throughout the whole season, I just keep rolling with him, to be honest with you, unless, again, he gets hurt or if the team really does struggle to that point where they need a change. Otherwise, I'm rolling with Sam the rest of the season.
Awesome. Well, you know, we filibustered on this enough. I guess we need to get to it and talk to the debacle that was today's game. Vikings offense led by Case Keenum taking on Big Ben and the Steelers. It's a game most of us, I think, even with Sam Bradford at quarterback, thought was going to be a tough one going into Pittsburgh. You know, playing that team that, you know, does have a fairly ferocious front seven. Their secondary can be exploited, you know, if you can give a quarterback time. But their front seven and their pass rush, they were formidable. So it was something that we were all a little bit nervous about. But then the game got going. And, I mean, the offense, yeah, we expected the offense to not be great. But I really came out of this game more concerned about just the defense and the sloppiness and the mistakes. Like, I know a lot of folks were you know, on Twitter and other places complaining about the referees. But, I mean, most of the big penalties that went against us, when you looked at the replay, I mean, they were pretty obvious. We were grabbing on people. I mean, our man Trey Waynes out there getting roasted. Terrence Newman getting roasted. I don't know. I guess what were your thoughts? And Miles, I'll start with you on this one. Like, obviously the offense was what it was, but what were your thoughts kind of coming away from this and, you know, the sloppiness that was, you know, today's game from just an overall team defensive perspective, not even to mention that, you know, the weakest attempt at a fake punt that I think has ever been attempted in NFL history. So I guess what were your thoughts and what were your big takeaways from everything that happened in the game?
Real quick, it was not worse than the Indianapolis Colts a few years ago against the New England Patriots, but it was bad.
Yeah, but I mean, the difference with that one is, I mean, they weren't supposed to snap the ball on that one.
I understand. This one,
we actually called and ran that play, and then Quigley was out there looking like Yinka throwing the ball.
Agreed. But for real though, especially with the team itself, at least having an understanding of, you know, Sam might not be able to go this week. The defense knows that they're like the bread and butter of this team. They know that they're the X factor. They know they're the better unit between the offense and defense. I mean, it's just the reality. So the defense really need to do a better job in a game like this, where you hear, you know, Sam Bradford's either not going to be fully healthy or he's not going to go at all. That, you know, you guys, they know that they needed to be the group. They needed to, you know, step up.
Do we have an elite defense?
I mean,
in your opinion, because I know that gets kicked around a lot, but do we have an elite defense?
We have the ability to be elite. I don't know if it is elite. They have the ability to be elite. I know that's, I'm sure a lot of teams can say that, but we're on the cusp. I will say that using the word elite is kind of tough. I don't think there are many elite defenses out there. I know people are already ready to coin the Jacksonville Jaguars defense, you know, the best in the league and all that after week one. So I really do think they're on the cusp. They're one of the top. I will still say top five defense in the league. Whether, you know, people can take that how they want, but in terms of like today's game, not having your starting quarterback in Sam Bradford, the defense really needed to do better and step up and help out the offense. And I know the offense didn't help themselves out in any shape or form, but we kind of expected this, and I know the defense knew that they weren't going to get, like, you know, 25 points coming from, you know, a Case Keenum-led offense. There would have to be a lot of, you know, weird things occur for that to happen. And I know the defense knew that. So they needed to step up and, you know, play mistake-free football, and they didn't do that at all. And Big Ben took advantage of it. You know, his stat line didn't show it, but he looked like Aaron Rodgers today in terms of, you know, you see the one-on-one matchup against the DB, it's third and long. I'm just going to throw it up and see if my guy can either go make a play or if there's going to be a penalty and get that, you know, that automatic first down. And he did that on a numerous amount of times today and to really flip the field. And when you flip the field the way they did, you know, those times, it really kills what you can do, you know, both offensively and defensively. And then, you know, you touched on the fake punt, which I didn't understand coming out of half. You're only down at the time, I think it was 14-3, and you're still in the game. Yeah, that's what happened. It was 14-3 coming out of half inside your 35-yard line. That was a terrible call. I know people want to blame Prefer for that. Prefer might have brought it to the attention of Zimmer, but Zimmer is the one that gives the go-ahead if he's okay with that happening. And he did, and I'm not a fan of that. I just didn't like the situation or the timing. I don't like fake punts at all. I'd prefer if they were to try to run it instead of pass it. Having a punter pass the ball is never anything that I would expect to be a positive outcome. Offensively, I think the tackles really got exploited today. And even with TJ Watt being out, he ended up getting hurt early. Bud Dupree did work on Mike Remmers. Mike Remmers did not look good at all. Nick Easton really showed why, in my opinion, he should be the first rotational interior guy, not, you know, maybe potentially not a starter. This is why I kind of advocated for them not cutting Alex Boone. Not even because I didn't think they should have given Nick Easton an opportunity to start, but more so because I think the idea of just relying off of one preseason game that, you know, you trust a guy like Nick Easton to be your long-term, at least for this season, left guard, starting left guard, without really any, you know, solid relief at backup is, I don't know, I'm not a big fan of that. You know, I would rather have, you know, Boone on the team backing up Easton, if anything. And if you need to put him back, you know, put Boone back in, he's ready to go. And, you know what you have with him. So I'm pretty disappointed in that aspect of it. And, you know, otherwise than that, you know, Keenum kind of played how I expected him to. Really wish we could have got more involvement with Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook's disappointed me a little bit in the passing game, though. Would really like to see him catch the ball a little bit better than he has the first 2 weeks of the season. Because I think if he could start catching the ball a little bit better, they can start getting a little more creative with what they can do with him. But if he's not going to catch the ball, then he can't really, you know, get as creative as you'd like to. So, just not a very good game overall. Really need to see a lot more.
How about you, Yanka? What were your thoughts?
Okay, first of all, y'all haven't seen me throw the football. You don't know how accurate. I'm moving up to QB2, so just be careful now. Second of all, as far as the game, I actually want to address the thing that Miles had talked about when it comes to Boone. Now, this isn't completely on the Vikings because of the fact that, you know, the Vikings essentially went to Alex Boone and were just like, hey, we're going to have you go on the bench because, you know, either what we're seeing with Nick Easton is we like what he's doing, or, you know, you're not performing at the level that we need to warrant you being the starter right now. And Boone essentially laughed in their face and was upset about it. And he was just like, no. And they also were going to give him a pay cut as well, too. That's another thing that he said he wasn't going to do. So, you know, when it came to negotiations, they're just like, all right, you're not taking pay cut. You're not coming off the bench. We're just going to have to cut you. Whereas I do agree with Miles, I didn't want to see him leave the team because I didn't think that he has played poorly enough to get cut. Even throughout the season, I think he was one of the better offensive linemen throughout the entire preseason. However, I knew that they wanted to move in a different direction as far as what they wanted from their offensive line.
Quick question though, with the Alex Boone situation.
Yeah,
he doesn't really have a choice though if he doesn't start or not. That's not up to him. The contract negotiations aside, I totally agree. If I was a player, I wouldn't want to, you know, take a pay cut either.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not his decision if he's going to start or not. So I think that's kind of the misconception that it was his decision, you know. But
no, it wasn't his decision. The contract was, yeah.
Situation, I totally understand. But the him not starting and being like, no, then I don't know. That's just, It doesn't fly.
But I mean, like, I'm saying this as far as, like, when you approach a player, like, hey, we're probably going to have – it's no different than when they're approaching, like, Brian Robinson and letting him know, hey, we're probably going to have Danielle Hunter start in your place. You know, just make sure that we're all good. I'm sure that those kinds of conversations happen all the time.
Sure.
And, you know, being a veteran, you know, you want to do what's best for your team. And not to say Alex Boone is a selfish player, but, you know, he probably wasn't happy. You look at how Alex Boone is. He definitely loves being a starter. He loves – you know, just kind of being obnoxious, being the talker, all other stuff, trying to rally his guys. So he's not going to do that. He doesn't want to do that from the bench. But, no, it was a good point that you raised just now. Overall, as far as what I saw on both sides of the ball, I'm still going to, you know, do my Leslie Frazier and go back and watch the tape. There was very little things that I like from what I saw from the offensive line. Nick Easton was continually getting eaten. I don't know if it's just a communication thing, but it's just like he just confidence in what he feels that he should be seeing. There are assignments that there was one play specific, I can't remember what it was, where I think he missed his assignment, and to make up for it, he started to block a guy that Elfline had already had, you know, kind of blocked up. And I'm thinking to myself, like, honestly, you just let the dude go by and gave up a hurry just for the purpose of – and then you went to another guy to make it seem as if all the plan all along was to double team. Now, obviously, I don't know what the play design was, but it definitely seemed more of he made the mistake and try to make up for it versus, you know, that's his assignment all along. I really like what I'm seeing out of Laquon Treadwell, and I know that our expectations maybe for him – have been lowered, or, you know, maybe they've been corrected just because of his draft position. But I have said this for probably close to a year now, like Laquon Treadwell's role right now is, you know, in the games where Diggs and Adam Thielen are, you know, maybe they're blanketed or they're commanding more attention. Those are the games where Laquon Treadwell should eat up more, not just targets, but also, you know, average yards. And I think we're maybe starting to see a little bit up more of that. I know that we're still going to face some tougher competition, but I'm liking what I'm seeing as far as him clearly starting to grow as a route runner, grow as a guy who can, you know, start to make more plays. Defensively, Linval Joseph is an absolute animal. He doesn't get nearly enough credit as I wish he would. The Vikings gave him plenty of credit with that contract extension, but. Everson Griffin is playing lights out. I know that the numbers aren't necessarily showing Danielle Hunter being as good as he has actually been. But if you watch some of his play, he's definitely helping to collapse the pocket, or at least make the pocket a lot smaller over the last couple of games. He is, I think, doing a little bit better in run support. I have to, again, go back and watch the tape. But I do like what I'm seeing out of Danielle Hunter. I think he deserves this the starting role that he has won. I know he's still sharing a little bit of time with Brian Robinson still right now. Trey Waynes is I'm ready to, I think I'm ready to say that I'm ready to move Mackenzie Alexander to the outside and just let him do what he's done since he's been in Clemson. I think Mackenzie Alexander is a better outside corner. Trey doesn't have the hips to be in the slot. I'm not the kind of guy who likes using the term bust, just because I think I think it's overused, and B, I think, I don't know. It's just a hot take that I'm just not a huge fan of. But I don't think that Trey Waynes, if he continues to play like he is, I just don't see him as having a future with this team. So. You know, that being said, I think Xavier Rhodes, besides that one penalty, he's been balling out. It was an overall it was an ugly game, you know, penalties. We had almost as many penalties as we had total yards, I think, in the first half. So, I mean, this team really struggles with being that undisciplined, but that was just a game. It was just a game that we clearly were undisciplined.
Yeah, and I mean, again, and it's tough because we have Yeah, there's a lot going on around here. Your starting quarterback goes down again. It's always going to be tough to beat, you know, a team that, you know, has playoff aspirations such as yourself, and you're going in there with your backup. But the lack of discipline, I think, was the thing that I was most disappointed about today, especially on the defense. And like you guys both touched on, the defense is the backbone of this team. So, you know, in a game like this, it would have been nice to see the defense really step up and, you know, do what we would want to see a defense that, you know, many of us think is an elite defense do, which is, you know, go out there and lock folks down. But I think the big issue and the thing that we're finding or seeing a lot of now is that we have some really good pieces. We have elite pieces probably at every level of the defense, but across from those elite pieces, we have some question marks, and it's not just one. So it makes it a lot more difficult for us to kind of patch those up or hide them. You know, if Waynes was the only question mark in the defensive secondary, then maybe it'd be a little bit easy. We just double his guy or whatever we're going to try to do to limit that damage. But, you know, Waynes is a question mark. Slot's a question mark. You know, when it comes to coverage, Sendejo is a question mark. I mean, depending on what we're talking about in coverage, you know, Harry can be a question mark at times there as well, right? So we're seeing that we have some elite pieces that when we get to dictate what's going on can be elite. But when you have a team that has as many weapons as the Steelers do, they were able to dictate the matchups and kind of just find where we are weak and go at them. And I think that's what teams are going to try to do to us throughout the course of the season. So it'll be interesting to see how things really play, really shake out now with, you know, Brock hopefully getting healthy and him getting into that mix and where we deploy him. Hopefully he does go in the slot. Hopefully we can get some more competition on that outside spot there and shore up some of those things that are making our defense look a little shakier than we would like right now.
Well, and also too, I think we're really starting to see Terrence Newman's age. And I'm not saying I don't think – yeah, we're finally starting to see Terrence Newman kind of, find his age and find his, like – you know, he's starting to slow down and lose a step a little bit because, you know, we've taken for granted the last two seasons him playing across from Xavier Rhodes, how well he's played and how much that's really helped this offense – or the defense, excuse me. So – you know, him not playing the way he, you know, up to, you know, the standards that he's been playing the last couple of years at his age has really shown. And, you know, then not having a guy like Trey Waynes take over the way you would hope he would after the, you know, sitting behind Terrence Newman for those 2 years is really disappointing because he's had every opportunity to kind of watch and learn and even, you know, be thrust into the fire. And then he's finally getting the opportunity to win that starting spot full time and he's just not taking advantage of it. So, It's just hard to see because you want him to be successful. You wanted him to be that guy, but as of right now, it's just really hard to see.
And since we are talking about, you know, our man Trey Waynes, I'm just gonna do a quick test to see if Flip listens to this episode and say, "Man, the Vikings really should have drafted Marcus Peters." And that's all we're gonna say about that. I'll see if Flip enters my mentions tomorrow to take me to task for bringing up Marcus Peters when we were talking about Trey Waynes. I guess was there anything else about the game that really stood out to you guys that you wanted to talk about, or you guys want to go ahead and wrap this thing on up?
I mean, on to Tampa, I think it'll be a tough go, but I think we're at home, right?
Let me confirm.
I think we're at home, but I want to.
Yeah, we're at home.
Yeah, I believe we're at home.
Which is always a, you know, really big home field advantage, which is great. So we'll see. Hopefully Sam Bradford's good to go. Hopefully that swelling goes down in the next couple of days and he's good to go. That'll be, we should know a little bit more by Thursday or so, for sure.
Yep, there we go. On to Tampa. How about you, Prince? Anything that you want to get off your chest here before we get on our way?
Miles had already touched on it. Terrence Newman, that red wine is not working anymore. And yeah, granted, it's only the second week and stuff, but I mean, I would imagine we're going to probably face some faster wide receivers down the stretch. And I just don't want Terrence Newman anywhere near him. The problem is that we're kind of having this thing where you put Trey Waynes on fast wide receivers, he gets burned because he has horrible hips. You put Terrence Newman on fast receivers and he gets burned because he's old. Xavier Rhodes can't cover all three corners at one time every single game. So I'm really hoping for Tremaine Brock to get activated real soon, as well as Jaleel Johnson, in my opinion. So.
Well, all right, then. I think that's pretty much everything we had to touch on for today. If you are listening, I mentioned Flip a little while ago, but he did already drop his article of his top plays for today's game. Check them out. Relive all of the fun that was had. Actually, there was really no fun that was had today, but check it out anyway, because Flip does really good work and always looks at things from a different perspective. So check that out. We'll be back recording again for y'all later on this week. And thanks for listening. Hopefully Tampa will be a better game. Have a good night, y'all.